8:24, we're joined by the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, Brad Cole. Brad, good to talk to you again.
Good morning.
The state of Illinois is in a collective standoff in many respects with the governor. The governor has been emphatic on his press conferences and online, saying, call your mayor, call your city councils, ask them what you're doing, what they're doing to keep you safe. He wants enforcement on these new mitigation rules, and there's a kind of a collective standoff.
Yeah, and that's not a good thing. We've called this week and previously, actually since April, as you know, because we've talked about it, the Illinois Municipal League has called on the governor to work with local leaders and elected officials to enforce all of the phases so far of the Restore Illinois plan, and then most recently in these different tiers of the enhanced mitigations. There's been a lot of finger-pointing at mayors and city council members, but the reality is that many of these community leaders don't have the capacity to enforce some of the executive orders. There's some confusion about the authority that they have, and we're getting mixed signals from the entities that actually do have clear authority, like the county health departments and state's attorneys. I've heard from mayors across the state that have said that their state's attorney has outright said that he or she will not prosecute or enforce any of the ordinance or executive orders that are issued. And health departments are in a tight spot about going in and closing down restaurants and other facilities. So it is a little bit of a standoff. We're trying to work with the governor and the state agencies to figure out how we can work through that, but it has been difficult the last several weeks.
You used the term state's attorney just a couple of moments ago. When you look at the material, you talk to law enforcement officers, and it appears as the fulcrum point, the pivot person in this entire decision-making, if the decision's going to be made on prosecuting, it's the job of the state's attorney.
That's correct. And, you know, in the home rule communities, which are generally the larger cities over 25,000 population, or if they've adopted that by referendum, there is an opportunity to do some local ordinances, and maybe they have a city ordinance violation that they can prosecute through the local courts. But otherwise, it's up to the state's attorney. And in you and I talked about the JCAR hearings from this past summer, the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules. And during those hearings, the governor's own attorney stipulated that the state's attorney is the person that's going to have the authority to enforce and prosecute these issues. And quite frankly, most of them around the state are choosing not to.
You know what I find ironic about this in reading the transcript from August 11th JCAR meeting? Ms. Spillane, the legal representation for the governor, says this was not the Department of Public Health intention. The burden of compliance is intentionally placed on the business, not on particular individuals. The ironic part of this is, after speaking with law enforcement officials, if they go in, write a ticket, they don't have the legal ground to stand on to do that. They are held personally liable. They could, in fact, lose everything, according to a conversation with Johnson County Sheriff Pete Sopcich on Wednesday.
Yeah, so there's an issue there where the sheriffs don't feel like they have the authority. You know, there's a real question. And actually, later this morning, I have a call with the Illinois State Police Director, Director Brennan Kelly, to talk about some of the authority that is granted. We do think at the Illinois Municipal League that there is authority for some of these actions through the Illinois Emergency Management Agency Act. Going back to the stay-at-home orders, we got some clarification on that. But the sheriffs and police chiefs and others are rightfully concerned about what their enforcement authority is and how they can do it, and whether the really best place to enforce this is against the business owner or the individual. If you're the business owner and you have a customer or patron that doesn't want to comply, what do? You can try and try and try, but if you're not successful, then are you the person? Is your business the entity that gets cited? It's just an unfortunate circumstance with a lot of confusion. the Illinois Municipal League. We're trying to get that clarified. That's the purpose of our call later today with the state police and the ongoing communication and discussions with the governor's office.
You know, and I've had discussions with some of your members in the Illinois Municipal League. We're speaking with Brad Cole, executive director of the IML. We've talked about restaurants, bars, and businesses compliance and mitigation. But when I speak to many mayors, what seems to inevitably come up in the conversation is the mask mandate. And mayors telling me, in some cases yay, in some cases nay, that if I go to my city council and I ask for a mask mandate, I'm not going to get enough votes to make this an ordinance. I can't do this with the current makeup. Even if I wanted to, I wouldn't be able to get the votes to do so. So we really have more than one item on the table when it comes to enforcement.
Yes, and the face covering ordinances that, you know, some communities have adopted, I think Carbondale has adopted one. I know Springfield actually adopted one with individual penalties up to $50. I think other communities like Edwardsville and several in the suburban and northern parts of the state are considering local ordinances on face coverings as well. But you do have that issue. Is there enough local support on the city council to adopt that? If not, is the state's mandate enforceable? If not, what do you do and how do you convince people that this is a good thing for their benefit and the benefit of their community? And that's really what we're down to right now, is all of these issues kind of commingled and not a lot of clarity.
Yeah, as Steve Frattini, Heron Mayor, earlier in the week, called the term, said he was in a nebulous area, which, you know, I get, right? Is there substance errors or not? It's going to be an ongoing problem. All right. So there was something that you and I talked about on the phone earlier this week, because I always have a tendency to disassemble press releases for keywords, because sometimes people are telling you things, but if you're not paying any attention, you get lost. You pointed this out to me. I've looked at it, and I've seen it now, multiple press releases in counties. Probable cases of COVID, using the word probable. That was an interesting change, and I noticed that creeping into more and more press releases I read. You too?
Yes, and in fact, the state has changed, the Department of Public Health has changed how they are citing the statistics every day, which is their prerogative, but it has gone from confirmed cases to confirmed and probable cases. That's caused some confusion, too, because what does probable mean? You know, and I believe they've been collecting this data from the beginning, but in the last week or 10 days, they've started reporting it as a part of their daily reports. And so when you see the numbers that are being reported as cases or tests, you have to read the rest of that press release. Is it confirmed or is it confirmed and probable?
And I've also noticed some references, you know, contributed to death. I've noticed some more maybe precise, if you care to read them properly and focus on what's being said. There are subtle changes in semantics when going on to this probable related to things along that when it comes to deaths. You know, December 3rd is going to be an important day. I get the idea in Sangamon County, now the Illinois Supreme Court has allowed combining 10 lawsuits into this ban on indoor dining. That brings it up to 19. The question is, as it has been so often in other lawsuits, the authority to issue multiple disaster proclamations in succession. December 3rd is going to be an important date in that respect.
Absolutely. And what you're seeing now is we have three branches of government, and you're a good student of civics, so you understand this. We have the executive branch that has issued orders and mitigations. Individuals and businesses are in dispute with some of those, and so they've gone to the judicial branch for clarity. And those are the cases that you just mentioned that are either have been in individual circuits and now consolidated into one and likely going to the Illinois Supreme Court. But what we really need is the remaining branch of government, the legislative branch, to come in and provide some clarity and some certainty through legislation that will allow for public input in the process of developing it, but to actually pass some laws that can statutorily support what the governor has done or what individual communities have done or what the people want done. You know, every piece of legislation begins with, be it enacted by the General Assembly on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois, some phrase like that. the people are needing to be represented by their General Assembly, and legislative action is what we need right now for some real clarity in all of these pieces of dispute.
All right, here's another question for you. Well, you and I have talked extensively about cure monies, because we keep hearing the governor appeal to Washington, D.C. about we need money for municipalities, we need money for counties, when once again, when you start disassembling press releases, I did note that I think it was 2 weeks ago that money was redirected or redistributed to universities, which I do not think were on the list, but I think around $5 million or so was done. I think in only five or six universities for that money. But that money has been how it was going to be distributed. It's been a big portion of what you and I have been talking about over the past months, whether it was me or Senator Dick Durbin, speaking with Senator Dick Durbin. Have we made success in this area to where you feel at least some level of satisfaction on making sure this money is properly distributed?
Well, some is a relative term. So let me just back up and say a few other things. I do want to recognize Senator Durbin has been supportive of our efforts to get more federal funding and to clarify how it can be used by local governments in Illinois. As we know, back on March 26th and March 27th, Congress and then the President acted to adopt the CARES Act. It sent money from the Congress, from the federal government, to the states and local governments. For months, that money was tied up and not available for local governments. We've had a fight through the JCAR that we talked about earlier with the state agencies. The money was whittled down, and the state moved a big portion of it away to actually their big program, their business incentive grants. The remaining $150 million or so out of what was originally supposed to be $800 million, the remaining $150 million dedicated to municipalities and local governments has been working its way through the system. Some communities have finally gotten their money, although it took months and months, and we're 8 months past when that happened, by the way. But now we're facing a deadline of December 1st. If communities don't certify with the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, and if they don't submit a survey telling DCEO how much of that money they think they're going to spend, then on December 1st, the state is going to take that money away. They're going to reallocate it. So communities throughout the state, particularly Southern Illinois, are going to lose that funding. We've talked here on your show many times about the need for communities to get in and certify and complete their surveys to get that money. So to answer your question, yes, there has been some movement. We are somewhat pleased. We would have liked a lot more flexibility in accordance with the federal law than what the state has allowed, but we're at almost the finish line, and now we just basically have to get communities to get the job done, to submit for what they can submit, to make sure they get all of their money that's been allocated to them. We're pushing that just desperately, wanting communities, especially the small communities, that think that it's too much time, too much effort. But for a Hearst or a Bush, it's going to lose $15,000 or $20,000. Submit your expenses, and there's plenty of things that you can submit for, and you got to do it by December 1st or you're going to lose that money. We have a message going out today to all the communities that have not fulfilled each of those steps, telling them literally for the 18th time, the deadline is December 1st. If you don't meet it, you're going to lose this money.
You know, I had Ted Dabrowski from WirePoints on earlier this week, and we started doing math, just trying to do some loose math, just how broke the state of Illinois is, how much debt is out there. There's two numbers I came up with. Best case scenario, $311 billion. Worst case scenario, $371 billion. How does my math ring with what you know?
Well, when you talk about the unfunded liability in the state's pension systems, the current budget situation with the state, and all of the other factors that are out there.
Bonds and covering insurance for state employees was also added, along with the ones you just mentioned.
Right, yeah. I mean, the health insurance costs and other issues, yeah, I think you're in that range. And that's real money.
A lot of it, too.
Fair tax. And that's going to be hard to come up with. And, I will say, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in the future, but, right now local governments are trying to develop their budgets. They're starting because they have a fiscal year usually that starts May 1st. So in November and December, they're working on their budgets. December, they have to file their property tax levies. and they're going to be working on their budgets, and they're upside down in a lot of these issues. When the state legislature does come back, the first thing they're going to be working on is their state budget for next year, beginning July 1st.
Right.
And with the hole that's been blown in all of that at the state and local levels, budgets are in deficit more than not, and that's a problem for us all.
Yeah.
'Cause there's only one person, as I've said, if I can just continue that thought,
sure,
there's only one person that pays the bill. That's the taxpayer.
And no doubt about that, and intimidating. And then what will happen next, who's to say? And I'm trying to figure out how the timing could be worse. I can't imagine the timing being worse and how that it would be. How would we achieve that if we tried? Before I let you go, from the American Monument text line, a question for you. What would Brad Cole do if he were still the mayor of Carbondale when it came to COVID rule enforcement?
I've been asked this question a lot by the people I work with, the mayors from around the state. They say, you know, you were a mayor, you were in local elected office for almost two decades. What would you do? And it's a tough question. I can tell you that I think you have to balance the enforcement of the mitigations with the reality that people still have to survive, the economic reality of the impact on people and their businesses, their employees, the community as a whole. Looking at Carbondale, you know, the university is a huge factor there for all of Southern Illinois. You know, what's the reality of their sustainability right now with regard to students? Everything has changed. I could tell you without uncertainty that I would be working as hard as I could and trying to figure out every possible way to balance the enforcement with the survival of the residents and the businesses, but it would not be easy. It's a tough job, and that's the job that these mayors and local officials have.
Executive Director of the Illinois Municipal League, Brad Cole. Brad, as always, appreciate your time and guidance.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you and your listeners, and wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving next week. Let's not forget that even with all of this stuff going on, we are a very fortunate people, communities, state, and nation, and we have much to be thankful for. We just need to take a moment to realize that, and we'll get through the rest of this.
I'm glad you did that. I should have done that.
But that's what I'm here for.
I'm still here. I'm still, you know, thinking about all the things you and I talked about. And when it comes to that, I want to do one quick summation. And this is, Brad was emphatic about this just mere minutes ago. If you are a community leader and you're in line for cure funds, federal government, money that was allotted for you, December 1st is your deadline. Where do you go to learn more if somebody's a little off on this, last-minute punch on this, Brad?
Contact the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Go to our website, iml.org/COVID. We have all of the information that's available there. But please talk to make sure that your treasurer, your finance officer, everybody is getting the information together. An email address that you can send to is localcure, localcure, at crowe.com, crowe.com, localcure@crowe.com. They're the entity that's helping the Department of Commerce with this, and get your reimbursements in by December 1st.